Thank you. Like you said, my name is Bailey McHenry, and I'm a master's student at Kansas State University. And today I'm going to be sharing with you my research titled Balanced Nutrition and Crop Production Practices for Closing Sorghum Yield Gaps. So to start with, there are a lot of complex interactions between the genotype, the environment, and management factors in grain sorghum that have not been widely studied. And a better understanding of how all of these factors work together to optimize the use of all of our soil, plant, and water resources. And also, we would like to be able to close the yield gaps between our maximum attainable yield and our current on-farm yields that we're seeing. And finally, there is very little recent information on nutrient uptake in grain sorghum. So as you can see from this graph here, this was some of the most recent information that we have, and this was updated in 1993. So the objectives of my project are to understand the effect of fertilizer applications and their influence under diverse management practices, and also to identify management factors that will contribute to high yields, and finally to investigate nutrient uptake and partitioning under a wide variety of environments and crop production practices. For this project, we had four different locations for the 2014 growing season, two irrigated and two dryland. And today I will be sharing with you the results from one irrigated and one dryland for the sake of time. We used the hybrid called Sorghum Partners NK7633, and this is a hybrid that's commonly grown in Kansas, and it's well adapted for irrigation and also favorable dryland conditions. And additionally, it has an excellent yield potential. The project is set up as a randomized complete block design with 11 treatment combinations. So this table shows how the treatments are set up, and it might be just a little bit hard to read, but as you can see, there's 1 through 11, and basically each treatment takes into consideration all of the factors minus 1. So it's kind of testing for the significance when we remove one factor at a time. So treatment number 1, we like to call that our high input, because as you can see, it has all of the applications, which include a high seeding rate, a narrow row spacing, a Green Seeker nitrogen program and for a nitrogen recommendation, a fungicide and insecticide application, micronutrients of iron and zinc that were applied at planting, a plant growth regulator later in the season, and starter fertilizer of NPK and S, chloride, and also the last factor there at the bottom. We wanted to make sure that we had an environment that was not limiting in nitrogen. So treatment number 11 is very similar to treatment number 1, but we added a little bit extra nitrogen just to make sure that it wasn't a limiting situation. And so you also notice that treatment number 10, that's kind of like our control treatment, or we like to call that our common practice. Because as you may know, sorghum is generally grown under less favorable conditions. There's not always a lot of inputs that are put into it, so that's why we like to call that a common practice. So we collected data throughout the season, including soil tests and stand counts. We did above-ground biomass collection for our nutrient analysis. We did some physiological measurements at V5, flowering, and physiological maturity, and that included chlorophyll reading, leaf area index, canopy temperature, plant height and diameter, and the Green Seeker for the nitrogen application, and also finally the grain yield at the end of the season. So I'll go ahead and start with the weather conditions for the 2014 season. So this first location is in east central Kansas, and this was a dryland location for this project. And so one thing that you'll notice, we have the temperature on the right side and precipitation on the left. And you'll notice that there was a really low amount of precipitation for that whole middle part of the growing season. And so that really impacted our yields, as we'll see in a little bit. But I marked on there when flowering occurred. And as you can see, there was very, very little amount of rainfall prior to flowering and during flowering. And a total amount of precipitation was 363 millimeters. And then this is the weather conditions for the second location, and this is under irrigation. So the yellow bars on the graph show the irrigation that was applied in season. And again, there was low amounts of rainfall, but the irrigation was applied in a timely manner to make up for that. So here we had a total amount of water of 745 millimeters. So that's about twice what we had in the dry land location. All right, so for the nutrient uptake, this is going to be I'll explain how I'm going to have these set up. So you'll notice that the top two are irrigated, and the bottom two show the dry land location. And so for the sake of time, I'm just comparing two treatments. We have our high input, which is treatment number one, and our standard practice, which is treatment number 10. And the graph is set up so that the leaf portion is at the bottom, the stem is in yellow, and the head is in red. And so one thing that I'd like to point out on here is you can see that there is a much greater amount of nitrogen that was taken up into the grain in the irrigated two treatments as compared with the dry land. We had a lot more nitrogen that was accumulated in the leaves in the dry land location, but less of that was allocated to the grain later in the season. And the phosphorus uptake was also very similar, and this is set up in the same way. But you can see here that, again, that red portion on the top two graphs, the irrigated two, is just a little bit higher than our dry land location. So again, under irrigation, under some optimal conditions, we had more phosphorus that was being taken up and stored in the grain portion. And potassium, one thing I'd like to point out on this graph is that in the dry land location, you can see that that yellow portion, the stem, accumulated a lot more potassium than the irrigated did. And again, the irrigated allocated more potassium to the grain portion rather than the other two. So the yields for these locations, the dry land, we had no significant difference across all of our treatments. The greatest yield gap was 0.6 megagrams per hectare, and that was found between treatment number 10 and treatment number 6. And again, treatment 10 was our standard practice treatment, and that one yielded the highest in this really water-limiting environment. And treatment 6 was our micronutrients, the iron and zinc that we applied. But you can see that there's very little difference across all of the treatments, and I'll show in a little bit that there's a lot of variation across all of the treatments. So they're all between that 4 and 5 megagrams per hectare yield, so that yield gap was very minimal, even from the greatest to the least. Okay, this graph shows the irrigated yields that we received, and so from here, the greatest yield gap was 1.3 megagrams per hectare, and that was found between treatment number 9 and treatment number 10, with treatment 10 being the lowest, and that's our standard practice. And treatment 9 was our kind of a high input without chloride, but that one, again, as you can tell, is very similar to several of the other kind of high input treatments. And so there was no difference across all the other treatments except for treatment number 10. So under irrigation, that low input treatment yielded lower than under more intensive use of inputs. All right, and just to give you a little comparison, this was the dry land yields from the previous slide. And so that just kind of shows that that was almost half of what the irrigated yields were for this growing season. And from here, from this table, you can see that the variation was very high in our dry land situation, as I mentioned previously. So 23.8% variation across all the yields. And that variation was minimized quite a bit in under irrigation. So that whole field that we had for this project in dry land, we had very high amounts of variability across the whole thing, regardless of the treatment. So that's why we have such a high number there. All right, so now we'll take a look at the biomass accumulation throughout the growing season. And from here we can see, again, the irrigated are the top two graphs. And you can tell, this one's a little bit harder to tell a lot of differences across the treatments, but again, you can see that there is a little bit more biomass that was being put towards the grain portion of the plant rather than the stem and the leaf. And just to give you a clearer picture of that, I calculated the harvest index values for that. And so from the top two under irrigation, you can see that the harvest index is a 67%. So that means that the portion of grain to the rest of the biomass, 67% of that was grain. And in the bottom two, in the dry land, only 52 and 53%. So that's a whole 10% extra that was being accumulated in the grains, and that will translate over to the yields in these environments. And another factor that we looked at was the grain number per head. And so regardless of the treatment evaluated, you can see that the yield per plant on the left side was highly related to the final grain number regardless of that treatment. So it has a really strong correlation. So we can see that the grain number is really important in determining what our final yield is going to be. So in conclusion, we know that the high input approach, particularly treatment number 9, out-yielded our low input or our standard practice approach in non-water limiting environments. And in drought stress conditions, a low input approach yielded very comparably with our high input approach. And from there, we can assume that economically it's not going to be beneficial to put on all these extra inputs, as there's not going to be that return on that investment in terms of yield. Also, we can understand that implementing management practices that will impact the formation of grain number will have a high likelihood of increasing our yields and closing that yield gap that we talked about earlier between our maximum attainable yield and our current on-farm yield. And further biomass accumulation and nutrient uptake partitioning analysis studies are needed in order to better understand how some of those nutrients are being moved throughout the plant during the growing season, and especially in the other treatments as well. And we have our 2015 data is still in progress. So I'd like to acknowledge my advisors and my team that helped with this project. And at this time, I will take any questions. You know, that's a great question. As I mentioned previously, that we know that in the dry land, in the really limiting environments, we know that that's probably not going to be economically beneficial. However, in those higher yielding environments, you know, if places where we receive more rainfall or where we do have access to irrigation, you know, it probably depends on the year and the prices of some of those inputs from year to year. But, you know, depending on how you purchase those, I think that it could be economically beneficial to put some of those inputs on, particularly some of the nutrients that we applied, and those type of things contributed quite a bit.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? We still have time for another one?
Yes.
With the findings that you had from your research, how does this change the current fertilizer recommendations as far as replacement for grain removal for grain sorghum?
That's an excellent question. Yes, that I think is something that we will need to study a little bit more to understand how much, you know, as we change environments and as that grain removal of nutrients is happening. I don't know off the top of my head what those numbers would come out to be, but I think that's something that we need to work on and continue working on with different fertilizer recommendations to see what is being removed and therefore what we need to put back. So off the top of my head, I don't have a great answer for you, but I think that's something that's worth looking into that would be a great next step for this project to put some numbers with that.
Good. Is there no more questions with Penn Valley?